Hey there, listeners. This is Abir Sigdar of the Local Global Leaders podcast. For this episode titled Millennial Manager, I spoke with Ashley Smith, the executive director and co-founder of Black Soil KY. I love talking with Ashley and hearing about how her early job experiences in the restaurant industry, working in a hospital, in the technology sector, in event planning, all kind of tied together and led her to create this amazing agricultural organization. And I really appreciated her emphasis on being a millennial manager. Ashley's a forward-thinking leader who's grown her organization by looking at ways to adapt to new economic trends and finding ways to align strategic partnerships. But she's also brought forward this inclusive thinking to the way she leads her team and the way she reflects on their well-being, both personally and professionally. For any fellow millennials, or of course anyone who's hoping to start a movement or an organization, this episode offers a lot of amazing insights. Hope you enjoy listening. Greetings, listeners. This is Abir Sigdar from the Local Global Leaders podcast. I'm here today with Ashley Smith at her headquarters at Black Soil, Kentucky, here in Lexington. Ashley, thanks so much for joining us in this episode.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah, I've heard so much about your work from so many people in Lexington, so it's just such a great honor to be in your space in this really great area. Do you call it like the Enrichment Center?
Right, or our Fulfillment
Center. Fulfillment Center, yes, sorry. Fulfillment Center. I really like that name. It's a really cool area. I definitely want to try to buy one of those candles one day for sure.
Okay, sounds great. Definitely come back. Bring all your listeners too.
But yeah, thanks for taking the time. I'm really interested to hear about your background and your work in agricultural business here in Kentucky. But first, I just want our listeners, I want to ask you, who is Ashley Smith and how you became a leader? So what do you want our listeners to know off you right off the bat?
Okay, great. Well, Lexington native, lifelong resident, really started my career of service. Formerly, when I was 13 years old, as a candy striper at St. Joe East Medical Records. But my parents and immediate and extended family really stewarded and fostered a sense of community well-being, focus on service above self, really working to enrich the lives of others and seeing that investment return back to you. So my mother retired from education, the public school system. My father retired from working in the medical field and leadership there. So seeing both of them really live out their life's work in that way. And so me personally, since the time of 13 and really working to create a system, a numbering and filing system in the medical records room. Mm. There was no smartphone, no iPads, no iPods, nothing like that. And it was really mastering the mundane. And I talk about that sometimes when I give my presentations of really developing a mindset of analysis and being strategic in your approach and being efficient. So that's really worked to carry me. Graduate of Tate's Creek and the University of Kentucky. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about the actual work of getting into ag, but I've done work in nonprofits, hospitality and service. That's where I learned how to do large-scale events through volunteering and then eventual leadership with the Crave Lexington Food and Music Festival and a variety of different interests and passions that have intersected to really bring me to this place that I'm at now in my life. So I spend a lot of my time juggling the activities and energy of six-year-old fraternal twins, Caroline and Trevor Jr., and they are phenomenal, exceptional students within their own respective schools and in their STEM education.
That's really interesting to hear about that. Yeah, and I appreciate hearing about your parents. I was actually going to share my mom's also in the medical background, as a lot of my family. She's a doctor, and then I'm also a former teacher myself.
Awesome.
So can totally relate to that. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate hearing how, like, yeah, you mentioned just doing that kind of work, like even just the filing, how it helped you with your analytical skills from an early age. Like, I don't think most people really think about something like that.
Yes, yes. And I was also like obviously the youngest person in the department. So mentorship, being mentored was a very commonplace occurrence in my young life. And that's through, you know, the volunteer experience, the faith community I grew up in. Even, you know, educators through the public school system really taking time to cultivate me, not only as a person, but as someone they saw as a leader.
Mm. So you feel like, yeah, it sounds like that kind of goes into my next question, but all those things, that's what motivates you to be a leader, like from your faith to your family, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's kind of there's no other choice or no other way of being or knowing how to be. So I see that, you know, lived out in my twins. They love to give back and invest in a community garden. They do a lot of work with their dad and his work. So I'm excited to see it continue to live on. And it's like, it doesn't cost anything really, you know, material goods, but the heart investment is what will call for your time, effort, and energy.
Yeah. That's interesting to hear kids at such a young age being involved in that, and that community garden. That's really awesome.
Yes, they love it. They're great gardeners. They're great farmers. So shout out to the twins.
That's great. Yeah, I know I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, and my mom and dad, but they have just a huge garden at our house, but like our neighbors have gardens too. And not exactly community garden, but like we would just share vegetables
because there's so much. And you're probably drowning in zucchini and yellow squash and tomatoes.
Yeah. But I hadn't really, until hearing you describe that, I hadn't thought about, oh, we kind of had our own in my neighborhood, like a bunch of small community gardens collectively in a way.
So great.
But yeah, that's really cool to hear that your kids are carrying that on too. And now here, you know, how would you describe your role as executive director of Black Soil Kentucky?
Well, it's so funny. We had a chance to, the team, and I say we went to Center College recently and presented on our work. And I had each one of the staff members share about how their background has led them into agriculture, each of us being very unlikely participants in the industry, especially myself. So as the executive director here at Black Soil KY, I really focus on one, strategic partnerships, aligning with longevity and sustainability, with value sharing, aligning our missions and visions to reach even more families more effectively and more quickly. Additionally, stewarding the unique experience and expertise brought forth by each of our team members and bringing all of those values and strengths and molding them into an ecosystem so we can execute our vision and our mission. And then working alongside of farmers of really seeing metamorphosis from farmers who had been in farming maybe, I'd say, 3 to 4 years, and now they're closing in on their 10th year graduating from being considered new, young, and beginning, to a farm in 2018. We met the farmer, as he describes it, it looked like a jungle, and now it's one of the most widely known household names within the local farming community. So what I do here is really always walking a fine line and a balance of keeping my ear to consumer trends. How can we be competitive and innovative in serving rather than serving self-interest, more of community interest, interdependence. So, you know, obviously watching economic trends, world trends, imports, exports, what does that mean in the local context? And my academic, or what I studied at UK and graduated with a degree in sociology. So always looking at, you know, how do these trends affect this farm that's a high performer, and that will we lean in heavily to execute in harvest and yielding their products to a new and beginning farmer who now might be more fearful and risk averse to jump in compared to even 12 to 18 months ago. So there's a continuous observation and being able to be flexible and take on the brunt of, I guess, kind of rolling the dice, absorbing it all and being able to filter that through of here's where I would recommend we go, and then working with the team to formulate the final plan.
I like that. Yeah, I see that, like there's a balance of, yes, that self-interest of like you guys competing in the marketplace, but it's also more about serving the community.
Yes, absolutely. Because again, it's like if you can ease someone's pain points, they will, you will be etched in their mind, and their behavior will also respond and follow accordingly. So
it's interesting. Yeah, this is such a unique area of like this kind of nonprofit work you're doing. What inspired you to get involved? Yeah, and you kind of talked about it already a little bit, but tell us more about what inspired you to get involved in agribusiness and start Black Soil Kentucky.
Well, you know, I was recruited into agriculture in 2017 and quickly saw a huge opening and opportunity of a missed story that was in right there in, in hidden in plain sight. Leaders hidden in plain sight. Folks who had always been farming who were categorically overlooked or just presumed to not have the skill set, though they are a part of the community and culture that set the tone and standards of what agriculture is. So really look to, one, educate myself on what farming was and what it, the landscape was in Kentucky, and mirrored my educational journey alongside our agritourism activity. So I thought travel and then sharing a meal were easy ways to break down getting people, convincing them to get on a farm. If you're like three generations removed and you only perhaps heard about farming, seen negative representations of it in media, why would you be motivated? But we really framed it around the social cohesion and like getting to know the farmer and understanding like why a whole chicken is X amount of pound compared to going to a box retail store and really explaining and breaking down that supply chain and why you actually are in the driver's seat with your local farmer compared to you just kind of get what you get when you're at the whim and mercy of shopping at larger retail stores. So that's really how I got into this work of, I knew I had a background in event management and planning. I knew I had worked with artists and chefs before, so I was like, well, you know, I can frame working with farmers in the same mindset. Yeah. Idea people, maybe not so much execution people. And together, really, again, understanding where each of us strengths show up in the relationship. We've really balanced a prosperous, sustainable, like, resurgence of agriculture, and have gotten like the whole industry really excited and energized to see everyone really engaged and taking the field, no pun intended.
I like that. You mentioned your prior experience with that first job growing up, and I was curious what other prior leadership experience led you to this.
Okay, great. So other positions that have cultivated my leadership around developing event planning and management skills included working for a technology company that was headquartered in Lexington, but had six offices across five states. So I managed alongside of a team internal events, so like employee appreciation days for each of the branches, as well as external events, customer facing events, special movie lunch and learns, taking folks to different racetracks and providing hospitality. So that was a lot of logistics and coordination and really juggling the physical barriers of planning events and never seeing the location until the day of the event. So that has really helped develop the ability to think quickly, you know, especially working in hospitality and service, working in restaurants, high class, five-star restaurants, catering companies, just the energy, the hustle and bustle. And then just being able to now see all of those connections and opportunities realized through our agritourism activities through Black Soil. I'm excited to see my passion play out through my daily work and service. So I'm excited to have that privilege. And in many ways, it's an extreme privilege. I know, you know, working from 13 all the way to about, you know, 34, 35, and then leaving the public sector in 2019 to now at this point, I've led Black Soil full-time 5 years in January. So I stated to myself, if I can work that hard for others, then surely then I can work even harder for myself.
That's great. It's so interesting how you were able to learn from all these, like the diverse experiences of your background, so many areas, and bring that to agricultural work. I don't think most people could like connect those dots so well. So.
Yeah. And many chances I didn't have a choice but to. I was under a mandate when I graduated from the University of Kentucky that I had to have a job. And so, you know, always being proactive and thinking ahead. I know small business owners and entrepreneurs were wired that way. And then you throw in the perspective and lens of service, charitable work, nonprofit sector. So yeah, it is a very interesting intersection combination.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, you were able to really use those, like, you know, leverage your successes and your experiences. I also want to know that what are some of the biggest struggles you've encountered in your leadership journey?
If I could go back and give my younger self advice as I developed as a leader was, you know, be confident in your decision making, be thorough in your understanding of the types of decisions that you're making. Currently, it would be don't doubt yourself. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's the same thing. With so many fluctuations in the market, it's easy to be a bandwagon jumper of, oh, this trend looks hot, or, hey, let's jump on this social media platform or do this and that. But really staying the course and being confident in your vision, sometimes it can, you're kind of clearing it by the skin of your teeth, rolling the dice of, is this going to work out? So again, just being confident and steady and growing in my ability to trust, even though I've might have misjudged or made a mistake in the past, that can be an opportunity for growth and wisdom rather than retreating and not trying at all. So,
yeah, it sounds like that's what helps you balance out, like, so many of the different aspects of your work, from, yeah, like agritourism to education to public relations to partnerships. Like, is that kind of how you balance all those?
Yes, absolutely. And then also taking that wide net. So in 2019 and then heading into 2020, that pivot was just so vast. It was, let's find the strategy that will carry us, because there was such great uncertainty. And really that uncertainty carried until 23. Because the fluctuations up and down and really balancing out inflation and being just very hyper vigilant. So we actually moved from retail, where we were holding customers responsible for their own transactions, to finding grants that allowed us to provide, you know, in 2024, 18,600 families were served through our free produce distributions.
Oh, wow.
So it's those types of pivots that pay off. But again, you can roll the dice and it could just go the complete opposite way. So I'm excited to have greater knowledge of better and more seasoned decision making to lead us into the next realm, where we don't have to have the burden of, wow, we have so many programs, products, and services, to now, like, we've really emerged from that 2020 to 23 dust up, we're gonna make it through this, to now, okay, yes, we're really gonna make it. The sailing isn't always gonna be smooth, but we know the direction that doesn't lead us into our mission, in fulfilling it in the way that's most effective and efficient for our community. So maybe it's just something like, we're not going to do right now. And we have tabled many things you're seeing activated right now, like our Sprout mobile pharmacy market, which is our farmer's market truck. That was on the shelf for like 3 or 4 years while needing to address the urgency of the moment with serving the customers and with the free food distributions.
It's, yeah, so many amazing, like, things your organization does in the community. I guess I want to ask, like, when you were young, when you were a kid or even a student, did you see yourself, like, one day starting an organization like this?
I've been working since about 2012, 2013 to achieve full-time entrepreneurship, owning a business. I always wanted to have a business that focused on events, hosting events, educating the community, and using marketing and branding. So in 2012, 2013, it looked completely different. It was more tailored to working with restaurants, the hospitality industry and sector. So food and beverage have always been present in my career journey and path. This type of work really found me, and I feel like my purpose has been activated even more, you know, by being recruited into agriculture and discovering this opportunity to really fill a void in the overall conversation of, well, do you consistently wonder why we have food insecurity when the majority of the producers who could really activate excitement mm-hmm. and representation are not even activated? They're not even tapped on the shoulder. And that's not just speaking about Black farmers. There's such cultural and ethnic diversity within the ways that we eat. Each culture having their own representation in agriculture is pivotal and critical.
I mean, looking too, yeah, like at this toolkit you have for BIPOC farmers, like the, I guess you all focus on, you know, look a lot at the Black community, but also like all communities of color and all, like kind of even all marginalized communities.
Absolutely. You know, when we were able to activate the program that enabled us to serve, you know, nearly 19,000 Kentuckians, we reached wide and far into every type of farm and farming community, then matched up that farmer's product with their culture through a community partner. So just being really intentional, it's so much more than getting someone a bag of groceries. Mm-hmm. It's the intentionality and ensuring that, you know, the way you're packing the share is common sense based. And you're also ensuring that they can stay in touch and continue their education. So QR codes, flyers. And then again, the community partners themselves are ambassadors who serve as their own advocates and a bridge towards our work too.
That's awesome. I know we talked already about some of the leadership struggles. I was curious if you ever had any experiences of like toxic leadership that you've learned from or reflect on.
Oh gosh, I'm a millennial. So we have tons of employment stories. Again, I worked in the restaurant industry before the Me Too movement, which had roots in the hospitality and service industry and how folks spoke to and treat or mistreat individuals within that sector. So I would say, as toxic as it was, there were so many times I wanted to quit and give up because of the toxicity that I had to find within myself, you know, boundaries, what I was not going to tolerate, what I would tolerate, and when and when not to give up. So I would definitely say there is a lot of work to be done in the leadership approach within our hospitality and service industry. But yeah, definitely that's why I'm a millennial manager, where I'm just like, accountability is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's you know, like I reflect the same way too. Like, it's good to see we're thinking about this more now, but it, you know, wish it could have started earlier.
Absolutely.
And even mentioning, yeah, I think we forget with the Me Too. Of course, it became mainstream when it became mm-hmm. a Hollywood thing, and I think that's very important, but that's not exactly where it started. It started in the service industry. Mm-hmm. What would you say is your overall, do you have like a leadership style or philosophy you use?
Definitely team and collaborative, team-based approach, servant leadership. If I'm asking you to do it, it's something that I've already done myself, or we will spend time executing and implementing that together. So I can delegate, get you started, but walking it out alongside of you and not just waiting all the way to the end until it's done. Let's develop the process, encouraging the well-being and balance, again, like to the kudos of being a millennial manager, of seeing how previous generations have groveled and given decades of their lives to businesses that don't even want to seek out greater fulfillment and quality of life improvements for them. So definitely wanting to make a strong impact. So we have a 4-day work week, Monday through Thursday. We adopted that around the summer of 24, and that's been a great opportunity to have some reprieve. We have extremely taxing busy season. So May through November, we are heavy in storytelling, event planning, executing specialty events, so that December through April, we then kind of sloth around and hibernate and have a slower ramp into it. So I seek to be a manager that I would like to have, but again, that's our blind spot as being millennials, because we struggle with people pleasing, wanting to be liked so much, and trying to not be someone who's contributing to workplace trauma and PTSD. Like, we know all the language, so I would definitely say my leadership style would be very observant, feedback driven, and we're teammates. Let's do this together.
That's awesome. And it sounds like you think a lot about the well-being and the mental health of your team. Like, with the enacting the 4-day work week, is that something, kind of what you said earlier, is that something you, I guess, more like individually decided to do here, or you saw that kind of as a trend or something happening? Or,
well, I know some other nonprofits like Step by Step, led by Tanya Torp, have this culture as well. I just saw an opening on our calendar. I noticed a pattern that we didn't have any events or meetings on Fridays, and it kind of continued for several months. And I said, well, this is probably not going to happen again, and before it fills up, let me just go on and block this out. Coming off of that 23 kind of landing off of the COVID-19 pivot and intense energy that brought, really seeking to have a benefit that provides employee retention. So we have been able to extend major medical and health insurance, retirement plans, and that's just something that's developed since 23-24. Something that was a goal that I worked diligently to achieve. Again, a small business wants to attract and retain great talent. It in addition to being socially driven towards the greater good, folks also need to be able to take care of themselves, and that's nothing to shame anyone about. That's where that motivation was inspired.
Yeah, and I think we were saying earlier with, I think, millennials, and we're seeing this with Gen Z, kind of, they're more outspoken about it, but being open about the mental health needs, especially in the workplace.
Yes, absolutely. So we do, we have some winter closure time. We do a summer break that lasts a week, and then we also have paid time off that includes sick, mental health days, and then obviously vacation.
That's interesting to hear. Do you ever, with your work, I've happened to read about too, and it, like, mental health related, is like mental health for farmers and people in the agricultural field. Does that kind of tie into your work too?
So our approach with mental health for farmers, oftentimes mental health for farmers is always focused on farm equipment safety, which again, that's a necessity. Or someone tragically losing their life in an infrastructure incident, like being suffocated in a grain bin. Those are very tragic occurrences, and we are not downplaying or minimizing those lived experiences. The mental health struggles that predominantly face the farmers that we serve in our ecosystem focus on someone who is a decision maker, withholding information, making the onboarding process of how do you work in procuring my goods through your market. That alone took 2 and 3 years for some institutions. As a social scientist, I used those experiences to gather a theory that said individuals are driving a lot of this craziness. It is the individual's implicit bias. Because then we'd go to another institution and immediately onboard and become vendors, and did 3 and 4 times worth of business and deliveries with said institution, while institution A is still hemming and hawing and moving the goalpost and scattering, these little nuggets or tokens of what the next steps are. I balanced both of those experiences out and saw in real time how both experiences gravely affected, negatively and positively, the outcomes for the farmer's mental health. If I'm growing food, I just need to understand, how do I get it to you? Mm-hmm. And so what Black Soil really stepped up and took up space was being an advocate with our institutional procurement, of really weeding out, like, you're not going to act like you don't know how to speak to farmers, work with farmers, just because they perhaps don't share the same complexion as you. Like, that was bonkers. I mean, these are folks who hold a yes or a no and not understand the gravity of those decisions and their lack of wanting to be more deep in their thinking and try new things. Mm-hmm. A lot with agriculture that I observed, because it's very fixed. It's like this, it's always going to be like this. And I was like, let's radically disrupt all of this. And let's give greater value, regard, and respect to those who are growing our specialty crops. And we do a lot of focus on row crops and those that are exported out of communities. And again, it's not weighing out a good or a bad. It's both are needed desperately. And we really need to elevate the value of the person growing our fruits and vegetables and tending to our local meats.
Mm, it sounds like in so many ways you really brought that millennial management to the world. It's such a catchy phrase. Now I want to share as part of my leadership philosophy. But I have my 3 M's. Yeah, you have those 2 M's. But my 3 are, I think the 3 major components of being an effective leader are to be a motivator, to be a competent manager, and to be a supportive mentor. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, that's a big aspect of all the work you do. Do you see these as like 3 separate roles, or kind of all tied together as one thing, or kind of how do you view those 3 M's?
Yeah, those are great. I love those descriptors. They have to work hand in hand. Being well-rounded and balanced, if that's what you're seeking in others, that's what, obviously, you've got to put your mask on first. So some of my biggest leadership struggles have just been getting outside of myself mm-hmm. and out of the way to let the purpose and the what's been invested in me to come out in the right way. So I would agree that approach is effective, it's energizing, and it shares empathy. I think we really lack empathy, and that's one of the things that we work to weave into all of this work of, why should I care, right? Mm-hmm. How do you convince folks who are choosing between paying rent or life-saving, you know, prescriptions and medical drugs? Do you want me to have empathy for you, downtrodden farmer living in the same community as me, right? So, like, where are the commonalities, and where can we find each other sitting across the table and saying, you know, we can help each other, we can work together. You have a need, and I have what supply can meet the demand for that need.
That's amazing. I appreciate you answering all those questions about leadership development. Now I want to kind of ask a few, what I kind of call my, originally called my local global questions, but I'll call them my fun questions.
Great, love it.
But first, are there any leadership lessons you've learned from different global sources, and even, you know, things like books, movie, TV, or pop culture?
Oh, wow. I've definitely gotten more into watching anime. Oh. So really the calm, sage, slower approach. I appreciate the insights and the creativity of kind of like a parable, the parables aspect or the storytelling aspect within the anime. So definitely looking to gain a greater viewership for that hard work.
Are there any, I'm an anime fan myself, any particular anime you suggest?
I've been introduced mainly to Bleach.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. Bleach is,
I haven't seen enough of it. I have a lot of friends who are into it. But
it's pretty good.
Yeah. I suggest, if you haven't seen My Hero Academia, okay. I think you'd appreciate that one.
Awesome, thank you. That's,
yeah. Who are some of your most important leadership role models, whether, you know, fictional or real people?
Okay, great. Off the top, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, her name, Carolyn Flowers. She was a home economics teacher in Western Kentucky. And she was actually a teacher during integration in Western Kentucky. Oh. So she was a very brave woman. She attended Kentucky State University and graduated in 1946. And then my mom graduated, you know, 30 years later. So I would also obviously, you know, say my mother's leadership of just always being very persistent, resilient, diligent. And a mentor that I met when I was around that 13, working as a volunteer, Lisa Higgins Hoard. Lisa Higgins definitely came into my life as a young teen, and obviously she's given many years of service at the University of Kentucky, and always has been someone who's looked out, been a role model of like how to conduct yourself as a young lady. You know, I think that's something that can be an unspoken need in the community when it comes to mentors, just people not maybe not having the etiquette or the social cues modeled for them all the way. Mm-hmm. And so she really inserted confidence in me as a young woman in my formidable years. So, and as I've grown, I've just kind of picked up different mentors. I love being mentored by Dr. Bill Relaford out in California, Seneca Edwards. She's in DC. So there's some really great folks in the ag industry who've taken me in.
Oh, that's awesome. It's good. Yeah, it's good to connect with other agricultural leaders, and especially in this time.
Yes.
Are there any other, I'll ask, like any local or global leaders you look up to as well?
Well, Lisa Higgins is here in Lexington, so I definitely say I look up to her leadership. LaTanya Jones, you know, whether it be art, civil activism, social justice, LaTanya has always been someone who has been a soft servant leader, but a fierce warrior. So a soft and fierce balance that is wrapped up in this loving wisdom that brings you in. Is like you just want to pour out your whole heart and tell her your life story upon first meeting her. But she's always been someone in my adulthood and my, you know, adult career to really help guide me as I've made some pretty big decisions.
That's awesome. I'm hoping to release this episode during National Agricultural Week in March.
Oh, great.
And so I was curious, you know, you kind of talked about this earlier, but how your agricultural work and the work you do with farmers, how it contributes here locally, but also nationally and globally, you know, in a communal sense, but also like to, you know, communally here, but also to the economy and how it contributes in all those aspects.
Absolutely. So one of the great ways that we're able to celebrate our work, especially during National Ag Week, is when I came into agriculture in 2017, our black farmers were, they existed. Let's be very clear. They were there, they existed. So I'm not in any way taking responsibility for discovering this talent, right? But there was a scattering aboutness where folks were decentralized and there wasn't a central motivating factor that wanted to keep folks farming. Mm-hmm. Our biggest role as black soil and being an advocacy engines is we want farmers to love farming even on their worst day as a farmer, and we want them to continue farming, and we're there to help serve them in any way that we can. Decentralized, working to just keep folks on their farms and keep the operations going. They were considered last place, not visible, lacking that. That was 2017. Fast forward to 2022, the same sector that was in last place moved to the front of the line to first place in having the largest growth in the product valuation. So their products in the market, right? What they're able to bring back to the farm had a 5-time growth over a 5-year period. So that 2017 when we entered into the work, to seeing it in 2022 going through the tumultuous times of the pandemic and so on and so forth. So nationally, we work outside of the state in California, Mississippi, Tennessee, Ohio. We're part of the USDA Regional Food Business Center. So our technical assistance and expertise in mobile markets, retail, market share, procurement, technical assistance around agribusiness and agritourism activities. So we're really excited to know that this started with just getting, convincing people to come from their comfortable urban dwellings and transport themselves about 45 minutes outside of Bowling Green, Kentucky, to step onto a farm, for some folks for the first time, for some folks revisiting, you know, experiences that they had abandoned for generations. So our work is a culmination of believing in literally a vision that we're theorizing, if you can just simply turn the heads and provide awareness and visibility from the consuming public, and by bridging them with farmers, chefs, and makers, that once they get to know each other, put them in the same room, they're really going to like each other, right? And they're going to develop these empathy-driven and base commonalities. So we're thrilled to see the small as well as the big splashes. But I will never trade a bunch of big splashes for those small wins that we've had over the last 8 years that have cemented and lamented trust-based long-term relationships that have cemented us through seeing fellow businesses close, shuttering hospitality industry. So I'm very thankful to look back on the past 8 years and know, like, now we're here at our fulfillment center, have Kentucky's first farmer's truck, mobile pharmacy market. So the hits can continue and the wins can continue. But in between both of those experiences, I'm thankful for wisdom. I'm thankful for sustainability and longevity in this work.
Yeah. And how do you, with your work, how do you reflect on global leadership and what's happening around the world with the work? How does that affect the work you do?
We would love to speak on a global platform or stage in really encouraging global communities to look inward, for them to strengthen their own self-sufficiency by teaching them what we've done here in Kentucky. When we bring and recruit guests to Kentucky every September for State of the Soil, they are blown away that this type of work is happening in Kentucky, because it's such a flyover, especially around the Black lived experience or Black agriculture, or small scale agriculture that's focused on specialty crops and not row crops. So being able to teach global communities to contextualize and localize their supply chain. And we've done that, and we'd love to have the chance to, you know, contribute to those trends, because at this point, globally, each country and its sovereignty is going to need to be strengthened, and those individuals within those communities are going to need the empowerment and engagement on what comes from growing your own food, and that very enthralling, prideful in a good way, if that can even be a context. So, yeah,
I think it's definitely something to be proud of. And it sounds like, yeah, the work you're doing is really, it's really putting Kentucky on the global map, like showing other people like across the world what Kentucky has to offer. Right.
Absolutely.
So that's amazing. What advice do you have for people who hope to do that, who hope to put Kentucky on the global map and show show the world what we have to offer here?
So many unique ideas dwell here in the Commonwealth, and oftentimes I think people might be disconnected from the capital they need to really get that idea up and going and thriving. So one, don't give up. Try to be as self-funded as you can. Start really small. Be patient. That's really, you know, we didn't have any major sponsors or outside support until like going into December of 2018, and we started in August of 2017. I would definitely encourage individuals who are finding themselves with a solution-based idea or concept to find trusted individuals and help them work, have them help you build up your infrastructure. I think a lot of times creators have an idea and we want to jump all the way to the end, but they have nothing to stand on. Just the idea is so great and they're excited. I had to really slow down and ensure, okay, have all of like the different business item setup, the financial setup, and any other things, but it didn't keep me from doing the other work, right? Yeah. They can go hand in hand. So I would definitely encourage folks with both of those pieces of feedback.
Yeah, that makes sense. It sounds like you need the infrastructure to back up your ideas for sure, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, because then what's the community going to do 5 years from now when you're gone?
Yeah.
Because you had an idea and nothing to back it up. So.
Yeah. If people want to learn more about Black Soil Kentucky, how can they find out more about your organization?
Well, we invite you to visit blacksoilky.com. We're also on social media, Facebook and Instagram are both at Black Soil KY. And you can visit us in person at the Black Soil KY Fulfillment Center and Neighborhood Pharmacy Market located in the Garden Springs Shopping Center. We're going to have a grand opening this summer, but we will be hosting Strawberry Days May 17th. It's kind of like our official season kickoff. Pre-orders for strawberries will be starting on St. Patrick's Day on March 17th. At cleavesfamilymarket.com. So that's just a great way to get the season started, put some cash flow into an operation, right? Getting the season started with capital is extremely important.
Yeah.
While the consumer gets to come out and enjoy some great Kentucky Fresh strawberries, and they're also supporting small businesses while doing that. So check us out. We look forward to serving you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wrote that date down. I'm definitely excited for Strawberry Days. My last question I wanted to ask, you gave advice for people who want to show what Kentucky has to offer. What advice do you have for people who just want to start an organization?
Yes. Okay. We definitely encourage you to start your organization. Your idea that will develop and fuel your mission is greatly needed because you were purposed with that service-driven opportunity. So it definitely means that there is a need that needs to be fulfilled. Similar to the previous answer, really lay out a plan, mm-hmm. be structured. Don't give in to, I've got to quit my job immediately. Don't be ashamed to have a public job. Utilize your time there effectively. Do your work, you know, be focused on what you need to. But, you know, I worked nights and weekends in building Black Soil over a 2-3 year period, mm-hmm. and then stepped into full-time, leadership with the organization. So be patient. An overnight success is like five years of work mm-hmm. knocking on your door. So,
Yeah, thank you for that. And thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for welcoming me to the great center
here. Come back anytime.
Yeah, and I'll definitely look forward to May 17th, Strawberry Days.
That's right, May 17th, Strawberry Days. Can't wait. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time for this interview. It was a lot of amazing information.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. That concludes my episode with Ashley Smith, one of our Commonwealth's most influential farmers who has shown the world how Kentucky contributes to agribusiness across the world. As she mentioned, visit blacksoilky.com to learn more about her organization, Black Soil Kentucky. You can also follow them on Facebook and Instagram at the handle blacksoilky. And don't forget to celebrate National Agricultural Week, which takes place this year from March 21st through 27th. My next episode featuring Angela Evans, the Fayette County Attorney, will be released in April. Remember to live local and think global, fellow changemakers.